If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It is Monday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We're going to begin the show with some college basketball talk, and then after that, we're going to continue with some college basketball talk, and then to conclude our show in the third and final segment, we will talk some NFL, maybe sprinkle in some headlines as well. But there were some additions to some local schools over the weekend, and some subtractions from a local school over the weekend. So we're going to open up with a subtraction, and that involves the Kansas Jayhawks, who had Chris Johnson, four-star guard, coming into the 2023 recruiting class. He was granted his release from the program. And I think for a lot of Kansas fans out there, this may come as a shock to you. But to some of you that have been very focused on the transfer portal, very focused on this recruiting class, the reality is, in college basketball now, and I think specifically in college basketball, because there's limited spots, there's limited scholarships. If you go into the transfer portal hard, which is what Kansas did, they had Hunter Dickinson, they had Artario Morris, they had Nicholas Timberlake, they had Parker Brown, they bring back Kevin McCuller. The reality is, those are the guys that are going to get the majority of the minutes in Lawrence next season. Those five, six guys, they're going to get a lot of minutes. El Marco Jackson, the lone five-star in the class, he's going to get a lot of minutes. So there's seven. You know, KJ Adams and DeJuan Harris, they're going to play a lot. There's eight or nine. So when you look at the freshmen that are incoming to Kansas, it was never going to be a possibility that you got the best of both worlds. You weren't going to hit all home runs in the transfer portal and maintain a top five recruiting class. It just wasn't realistic. And I think that's why when people were taken back, when Ernest Uday announced that he was entering the transfer portal, I think most Kansas fans, most college basketball fans, predicted that Zubi Ejiofor was going to hit the portal, because Zubi Ejiofor would have been the fourth big for Kansas, behind KJ Adams, behind Hunter Dickinson, and behind Ernest Uday. But Ernest Uday was another one of those guys that said, I don't want to stick around to play 5 to 6 minutes a game. I want to go somewhere where I can start. And for some of these freshmen, they're coming in going, well, I wanted to play 15 to 20 minutes a game. I know it's a loaded team, but I wanted playing time. I don't want a red shirt. And maybe there is a real-world possibility that the coaching staffs looked at Chris Johnson and said, we're going to need you to redshirt. We want you to be around. We believe you're going to be a valuable part of this team. But keep in mind, when Chris Johnson committed to Kansas last year, there weren't any of these big-time portal additions. And if you want my honest opinion, I think Chris Johnson started walking out the door the minute KU landed Artario Morris. Because when KU landed Artario Morris, that signaled to me, you're adding a guy that was just a five-star freshman 1 year ago. So this is a guy, theoretically, that could stay another year. And all signs point to him staying another year. I don't see DeJuan Harris Jr. going anywhere. Now, Marco Jackson may be a one-and-done, but we'll see how infiltrated he'll be into the starting five or coming off the bench. But now you still have five stars like El Marco Jackson, a four-star like Jamari McDowell. Those are guys that are going to get minutes, but you look at last year's team as well. I think this is a perfect indicator and why I think Kansas hit the portal, with the repercussions or the consequences being you're going to lose some talent. you are going to lose some young, maybe undeveloped talent. That was the same thing with Zubi Ejiofor and Ernest Udeh. Not really sure there was that much more to work with Bobby Pettiford or Joseph Yesufu. There was still something there for MJ Rice, but Bill Self and this coaching staff went into the offseason and said, we want to go in next year and not have to work with guys. We don't want to have to go through the first 2 months of the season and see those big-time struggles from freshmen. They're willing to do it with a couple of guys. I think they're more than willing to do it with Elmarco Jackson. But you saw last year the struggles of MJ Rice. Never got it going. You saw the struggles of Zubi Ejiofor. Truly never got it going. You saw the struggles again with Zach Clements. Never got it going. Ernest Udeh was the only guy to give you consistency in March, in late February, and you do lose him. But the rewards you get is you have Hunter Dickinson. So you approach the average college basketball fan and say, for the 2023-2024 season, do you want Hunter Dickinson or do you want Ernest Udeh? And I think 99% of college basketball fans would say Hunter Dickinson. Now, the same goes for Chris Johnson. Now, if you have Chris Johnson in your recruiting class, and I think a damn good guard coming out of the state of Texas, a great state in producing basketball talent, and you approach the average college basketball fan and say, do you want Artario Morris or do you want Chris Johnson? Now, let's add a little ripple here, because Artario Morris had off-court issues. It's one of the reasons he had to sit out at Texas, a domestic situation. But Bill Self and his coaching staff believe they've got it under control. So do you want Artario Morris, who was a five-star, played sparingly for Texas, but has some attitude problems and legal problems on his hand? Or do you want Chris Johnson, a four-star that's probably not going to contribute much to this current team, but could be a stud guard down the road? We've seen Bill Self and the coaching staff develop backcourt talent. But from a scoring aspect, from a how they fit into the 2023-2024 roster, I think that it's going to be Artario Morris. Now, we do have some breaking news in regards to the Kansas basketball team. Their non-conference schedule is now officially out. So they will open up their season with an exhibition game against Fort Hays State on November 1st. Then 5 days later, their true regular season opener, they will host North Carolina Central. Then on November 10th, the Jayhawks will host Manhattan College in Allen Fieldhouse. Then they will go to Chicago for the Champions Classic and take on Kentucky, who did lose Oscar Tshiebwe. I think we were predicting a matchup between Hunter Dickinson and Oscar Tshiebwe. Oscar Tshiebwe is staying in the NBA draft process, so it'll be a very young Kentucky team, and a Kentucky team with a lot of pressure to succeed not only in the regular season, but in the postseason. I don't believe they have made it to the second weekend in the last 4 to 5 years. Then on November 20th through the 22nd, they will, of course, be in the highly touted Maui Invitational. It'll include teams like Gonzaga. It'll include teams like Tennessee. Purdue will be there as well. It is going to be a loaded, loaded group in Hawaii from November 20th to November 22nd. On November 26th, they will be back at Allen Fieldhouse to host Eastern Illinois. Then on December 1st, the biggest non-conference matchup, I think, of any team, any opponent, any location all season long, it'll be Kansas and UConn in the Big 12 Big East Challenge on December 1st. Then on December 5th, they will have a little local matchup against UMKC. Then they will take on Missouri December 9th. That, again, will be at Allen Fieldhouse. Their first road game of the season will come against Indiana on December 16th at Assembly Hall. It'll be the, I guess, big-time matchup between Kansas and Mackenzie Imbaco. And then on December 22nd, right before Christmas break, Kansas will wrap up their non-conference slate with the Yale Bulldogs. So only one road game on that schedule, and then you've got some big-time matchups against Missouri, who we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, and who they added to their team. UConn on December 1st, you'll have Kentucky in the Champions Classic, and you'll have the Maui Invitational from November 20th to November 22nd. So that is Kansas's non-conference slate that was just put out by their official Twitter account. But back to this Kansas team and losing Chris Johnson, and maybe even the possibility of losing another guy down the road. I think that Kansas feels pretty strongly of the group that they have. And I think of the recruits that were going to leave, Chris Johnson felt like the most likely because he was going to be behind three, four, five guards maybe. DeJuan Harris Jr. is going to be out there. He'll play 35 minutes a game. You know, Nicholas Timberlake, Artario Morris is going to play upwards of 30 minutes a game. And Amarco Jackson will get a lot of minutes as well. So there's just not a lot there for Chris Johnson. I'm sure that he was told when he committed that you are going to have a role in your first year on campus. But things are changing. And with the transfer portal, a lot of things are going to continue to change because coaches are out there not to, I guess, go through a developmental process all the time. This adds a different element. You can add seasoned college basketball players, which is what Kansas did. And they brought back seasoned players. And they will take those seasoned players 9.5 times out of 10, I would say. That little sliver of wanting to develop, that's a 2024-2025 problem or a 2025-2026 problem. The thing is, though, and which is why I sit here and look at Kansas losing players, it is the reality of the transfer portal. If you want to be really good in the transfer portal, you don't always keep every single commit, and you can't for that matter, because scholarships start loading up. And when you're going around looking at other programs for guys to add to your team, that is one way to recruit. And I think for the landscape of college basketball, right, how many times have you seen a transcendent five-star talent? How many times? I think back to Zion Williamson. I think back to Jason Tatum. For Kansas, Josh Jackson and Andrew Wiggins. You know, there have been some incredible five stars. Derrick Rose, if you want to go pre-2010. You know, Jabari Parker. There were some ridiculously talented guys that were showstoppers, right? That you look top three in the class. They were going to go in, play 30 games, get on out, and go to the NBA. You want to go not a blue blood? Cade Cunningham, another one of those guys. Paolo Banchero, naming a lot of Duke players as well on this list. Kentucky, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins. Showstoppers. It has been some time for me, at least. I think the last showstopper there was Cade Cunningham, at least in my personal opinion. Not to say there haven't been talented guys, but I'm talking about guys that took over college basketball. Trae Young was another one of them. But there are a lot of five stars, too, that don't come into programs and play like five stars. There's guys that simply just don't have that type of takeover ability. Hey, Bryce Thompson for Kansas was a five star. And he didn't play that much in his first year. It was the COVID year. Then he transferred to Oklahoma State. Damn good player. A very, very good player for Oklahoma State. But he's not a five star player, in my opinion. And that's why I think in today's game, I'm more willing to see Kansas lose recruits, because when you add transfer portal guys, it's kind of the better here. It's the better product you're getting. It's the same exact thing in baseball when teams are trading for big league guys and they're trading prospects, right? And it's all about where you are, who you are. Do you think the New York Yankees or the Dodgers or the Astros or the Braves care about trading away their fifth-ranked prospect? Maybe. But they also know that their big league team is competing for championships. Now, they're not losing an Austin Riley. They're not losing a Mookie Betts. They're not losing a Aaron Judge, right? Those teams that compete for championships, They don't care about the 2024 season until that calendar turns, right? They're focused on the now. And I think for Kansas basketball, who hasn't missed the NCAA tournament in over 30 years, and that was due to an infraction, you're not looking to, oh, what's going to happen in 2024, 25. You want the current team to be as good as they can be. I can't believe I'm going to use Rex Hudler in this opening segment, but I thought it was a really good quote, maybe the best quote that Rex Hudler's ever had as a broadcaster for the Royals. And when the Royals traded for Andrew Benintendi and gave up Khalil Lee, who was a top 10 prospect in their system, he said, you will always trade a boy for a man. That is always what you'll do in baseball. If you feel like you're contending, you'll trade a boy for a man. When the Royals traded Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi, they traded boys for men. You'll get James Shields, get Wade Davis. Now, if you're not in the spot where you're going to compete, then yes, losing a four-star recruit isn't very good. If your goal is in a national championship, losing four and five stars, not very good. Or former McDonald's All-Americans, like Ernest Uday. It's not fun to lose those players. But for Kansas, their sights are set on a national championship, and when they made their deal with the devil, if you even really want to call it that, the only reason I say deal with the devil is you may get something you want, but you lose something you also valued. I think Kansas valued these guys. They wanted these guys to come to Lawrence, but you can't have everything. Right? You can't have this perfect setup and have the kumbaya feel. Right? This beautiful basketball place where you're playing in front of a sold-out crowd all the night. You bring in the top transfers, the top recruiting class, and everybody's happy. That's just not realistic. And if we're going to be even more realistic, I've used that word a lot in this opening segment, there's going to be KU players that become unhappy this season. They just are. Because when this team is playing, you have your starting five right now. At least I think you do. I think it's going to be DeJuan Harris Jr. I think it's going to be Artario Morris, then Kevin McCullough, then KJ Adams, then Hunter Dickinson. The only sub I'd put for that lineup is that maybe Nick Timberlake starts over Artario Morris. Maybe it comes down to how well those two guys defend. We've all seen how good of a defender Artario Morris is. But that's a starting five. And when a Kansas team is really good, those five play over 30 minutes a game. So you're just looking for bench production at that point. And there's going to be guys that feel like they're worth more than bench production. Guys will settle into their role. There will be guys that come in and go, all right, I know that I'm only going to get 5 to 6 minutes a game. Some days, KJ Adams is going to get in foul trouble, and Parker Brown's going to have to step up and play 15 to 20 minutes. Now, there's going to be times where DeJuan Harris Jr. maybe rolls an ankle or something. Somebody gets banged up, and Nicholas Timberlake's going to have to play a good amount of minutes. Or Almarco Jackson is going to have to run point for an extended period of time. What Kansas wanted to do was solidify that starting five and then make sure they've got really good depth. And I think they do have really good depth, and now they have one more scholarship spot open, and they can add another player. It had been reported by Jayhawk Slant and multiple other outlets that their roster was set before Chris Johnson wanted his release and was granted his release from the program or from his letter of intent. But now another spot is opened up, and Kansas can add another guy. So this team is not officially set now, and I'd still hold your breath as to maybe another guy in the 2023 recruiting class leaving. I don't have any inside information. I'm just saying you don't really know what the roster is going to look like until they all show up for boot camp or for that overseas game or tournament. I think they're going to play in Italy. I think that's where it's going to be. But until then, I'm still going to hold my breath because I didn't anticipate completely Chris Johnson wanting out of Kansas, but now I completely understand it. These guys want to go where they're going to play. They're not going to play behind the most loaded starting five in college basketball next year. I mean, it's the number one team, the preseason number one in the nation. Four stars that are the fourth or fifth guard on the team, they're not getting in. And if you don't believe me, look at what last year's team did. with talent, five-star talent, and the talent that was in the starting five. MJ Rice and Ernest Uday were five stars coming in. And Ernest Uday, coming into this team, couldn't beat out KJ Adams for the five spot. No, MJ Rice couldn't beat out, not that he was ever going to, but Jalen Wilson and Kevin McCullough. He couldn't really beat out Joseph Yesufu for more minutes. Sometimes five-star talent is not always going to be five-star talent, or four-star talent, it's not always going to be that. Now, at the same time, Bill Self and Kansas have developed three-star talent into being All-Americans. But sometimes when you're just wanting to win in this specific year, you go after the men and not so much the younger five-star type of players. You want five-star talent, but you also want really good college basketball players that are ready to play now and have shown they can play at this level. Feel like Kansas has gotten that with their starting five. But the news over the weekend from Lawrence, they lose Chris Johnson, one of their commits in the 2023 recruiting class. He was granted his release from his letter of intent. He will now find a new place to play college basketball this upcoming season. We'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, some Mizzou talk as the Tigers and Dennis Gates landed a 7'5" former SEC player. We'll tell you who he is and what our thoughts are on it next on ESPN Kansas City. We're back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We just opened up our show with some talk of the KU basketball team. Their non-conference schedule is now out. You can see that on their official Twitter page. We went over Chris Johnson being granted his release from his letter of intent, and KU can now add an extra player to their 2023-2024 roster. But the other local team I want to dive into here is the Missouri Tigers, as they landed a big man, and I put big man in quotes here, air quotes if you will, because this is more of a gargantuan-sized human being. Has to be, if I'm not mistaken, the biggest player in college basketball. I'm probably missing some 7'7" guy that plays in the Atlantic 10, but Missouri adds Connor Vanover, who did play at the Power 5 level prior to 2022 and 2023. And that's Connor Vanover, a 7'5", big man, only 227 pounds. But he comes over from Oral Roberts. Vanover had played at Arkansas for 2 years and played at Cal in the 2018-2019 season. So Missouri, who does lose Kobe Brown to the draft process, he's going to stay in there and try his luck in those two rounds in the NBA draft. They wanted to go out there and add some length, add some height, and they certainly get that. I think one of the flaws of last year's Missouri team is they just weren't very big. They were very quick. They were very active on the defensive end, but they did not have a rim protector. Their biggest guy out there in the starting five was 6'7", 6'8". Now, is it a foregone conclusion that Connor Vanover starts? No. I think you're always going to see how a certain guy fits into a rotation, if he stagnates the offense, if he's good enough back in the SEC, because I've seen this guy play more than one time when he was at Arkansas. He is not much of an offensive threat, or at least wasn't back then, but then found a home at Oral Roberts, and an Oral Roberts team that was very good, won over 30 games, did get beaten pretty badly by Duke in the NCAA tournament, but that's losing to Duke. There's no shame as a mid-major program in losing to the Duke Blue Devils. But Connor Vanover certainly has the length to alter shots. He averaged over 3 blocks per game last season and offensively averaged 12.7 points per game and also added 7.2 rebounds. I think he's a good defensive rebounder. Can't really say the same on the offensive end. And I think a lot of it comes down to he's not very thick. He's not going to, you know, bruise up people. He's not going to bully people down low. For being 7'5", a lot of finesse to it. He actually shoots from outside more than you would expect. He has attempted three-pointers before. In fact, last season, he shot 32.4% from three-point range. Now, in his last year at Arkansas in 2021-2022, that was career lows in a lot of aspects of his season there. At Arkansas, he only played in 15 games in 2021-2022, started in 10 of them. He averaged only 7.5 minutes per game, shot 7% from deep, and then from his point totals, averaged just 3.9 points and only averaged 2.1 rebounds. For an SEC standpoint, an SEC aspect, I'm not saying that's what Missouri's getting. If anything, I think he's got a better chance of replicating his first year at Arkansas when he averaged 6-4 for the Razorbacks. That, to me, feels more likely. Because sometimes with guys of this size, 7'5", 7'4", unless you're Shaquille O'Neal or you're, let's say, Udoka Azubuike, where you're just going to throw your weight around, a lot of these big-time centers, I mean big-time, big as in size, they're going to run out of gas. They're not as conditioned. And if they're not 280 pounds, they're going to get roughed up a little bit. You know, I think even a guy like Zach Edey, who's coming back to Purdue this year, is the favorite now to win National Player of the Year. You know, he's 7'4", 7'5", and he's a lot bigger than Connor Vanover. But even then, there were flaws to his game when he got worn down, when he was in his condition, and that is always going to be a concern for a guy that is 7'5". But for Missouri, I think they got exactly what they were looking for in a guy like this, a guy that can alter shots. Even if he's not a starter, you put him in for 15 to 20 minutes, he stands around the paint, and if you're going to go score inside, you got to go over a guy that is basically over the backboard, it feels like, with his arms. Now, he's going to be one of those freakishly long guys that everybody can just easily point out on TV or if you're at the game. It's not going to be the most smooth thing in the world, but if you just got him as a shot alterer, rim protector, I think you got what you desired. Now, I don't think he's going to come in there and average 15 points per game, but he gives Missouri height. He gives Missouri length, and they need that. They needed that last year. I think even more so than a bruiser power forward. I think they're going to already have that on this roster. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Marco. Are you looking at their roster right now? I believe Noah Carter is still going to be there, right?
Yeah, he was a senior. He's going to return for his fifth year.
Fifth year. Okay, So Noah Carter, to me, is that bruiser. That's your bruising four.
Yeah.
And I think for your five, maybe he does start. Maybe he does get the nod now that Kobe Brown is not coming back to Missouri.
I anticipate Noah Carter to be one of the starters at the four. Yeah.
So if you have Noah Carter at the four and you put Vanover at the five, I mean, he is coming off a season that was, I think, very successful. And it wasn't at a school that didn't do anything. It's not like he went somewhere where they were 9-24 and didn't even sniff the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. He played on a team that was a 12 seed, a team that won over 30 games. And a coach that then went to Wichita State because of how good he was following that season at Duke. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is an addition late in the transfer portal process where you went out there and got a guy that would have been, I think, a very nice plug-in for Missouri's team last year. Because Missouri's team last year thrived on speed, on creating turnovers. It was very chaotic. But if they played a team that could match that and they had more size, It was no contest. They could not defend anybody down low because a part of their game is speed, quickness, getting up and down the floor. Now, at the same time, I don't want to completely praise that aspect and not point out the glaring problem when you have a 7'5" guy, right? Then if you have a 7'5" player out there, you can't go up and down all the time. You can't run back and forth where you can wear down this guy in only a couple trips down the floor. Now, do you completely change your team around one guy and one guy that wasn't that good of a player in the SEC? No. But I think when he's out there on the floor, you have to adjust a little bit. I think you have to adjust your defense to be more of a sit back and let them come to us than us forcing everything into corners, trapping everything. of being very physical. Because at the end of the day, as big of a 7'5" guy as it can be out there, which is what Connor Vanover is, as big as you can be in the middle, if you have him just standing at the rim and guys are getting past guys on defense, well, then he's going to get in foul trouble, right? If you just go into contact there, you could get him two quick fouls early on. So Missouri has now this piece to their team where I feel like you have to alter it a little bit. You have to alter how you play defense when he's out there on the floor. Now, Marco, my first question about him, you said Noah Carter feels like a guy that you can pencil in as the four.
Uh-huh.
Do you pencil in Vanover as the five, or do you think you come have him come off the bench, or do you still want to wait and see who they may add before maybe training camp and boot camp rolls around?
So the way that I see this playing out, and I think that Noah Carter coming back to Missouri helps their roster immensely. He, to me, was one of the better role players on that team last year, and he grew a lot during that season. So for me, I'm really excited to see him back on this Missouri team and what he can do for the Tigers this year. They've had some transfer outs. Ronnie DeGray, who was one of their power forwards, he's now playing at Wichita State. If I had to choose between him and Carter, I would have taken Carter 10 out of 10 times. Just to what type of play, as far as retaining back on this Missouri roster. Now with Vanover, I think he may right now. My initial thought is bench player, sixth man right now. Considering Aiden Shaw, the freshman last year out of Overland Park, he showed signs of growth during the season. Can he play the five? Well, maybe not, but he could be someone that you could still place in there with a good offseason and good camps leading up to the non-con. He's a guy that you can place in there as a five. And now that's if Dennis Gates wants to kind of play off the same style or play with the similar size roster that he had last year, where Kobe Brown, 6'8", was your five as well, Aiden Shaw. Although his arms and his length of his body may fool you at sight, he's only 6'8" as well. So as far as a size and what I saw from him last year, I'm not going to say he is the automatic starting five for this Missouri team, but if Gates wants to use players that were on last year's team in his starting rotation, then Aiden Shaw is the guy that would be at the five when non-conference starts for the Tigers in basketball. But there are some guys that you could throw into the mix now with Connor Vanover transferring to Missouri. They also have a four-star center, Jordan Butler, out of Greenville, South Carolina. He's 7 foot. He's going to be a freshman on this team, the number two player coming out of the state. And so you'll throw him into the mix. So there may be a battle at the starting five for this Missouri team. And if you do have to move Aiden Shaw over to the four and start Vanover or Butler at the five, once again, I just think that I don't think that would be a bad thing for Missouri, considering what you could still have value-wise on the bench. And so it's going to be interesting to see how, in those first few non-conference games, how Dennis Gates runs through the rotation, because he does like to have, I guess, what we see out of Matt Quatrero with the Royals. He likes to play around with the lineups and figure out what the best possible five he can put out there game in and game out. And I think that's what kind of carried Missouri as far as end of the season success. In the beginning, you talked about the style of play that Missouri had that caught a lot of teams off guard, and then they met up with Kansas in the non-con, and they had to switch things up. They learned, Dennis Gates found out that that's not a lineup that he can win when going up against teams that are better than him, which was going to be the case when the SEC portion of the schedule started out. So this will allow Gates to have some wiggle room, have some flexibility, and maybe possibly allow him to create different lineups to throw at teams at different parts during the season. So for me, when I see what Connor Vanover did at Oral Roberts, leading the team in three-point field goals, leading the team in rebounds, can be a guy, can be a rim protector as well. If they can turn him into a shooter the way that they turned Kobe Brown into in a way that they bettered his game in the final year of his season at Missouri, then he could be a very lethal threat and a big, big contributor to this Missouri team, offensive and defensively, if he can find himself or work himself into the starting lineup as the five. That would help out with the freshman Jordan Butler, allowing him to grow his game the same way that they treated Aiden Shaw this last year. We didn't see a lot of him in the beginning, but they started using him over time. If Connor Vanover can come in here and bring what he's brought now, or bring what he did over at his previous team and then build off of that and improve it even more, then he could arguably be the second best player on this Missouri team. I like what I see stat-wise from his past, and I like what I've seen from Dennis Gates this last year as far as improving players through the offseason and then, of course, during the course of a season. So this is a very exciting ad for Missouri basketball and definitely going to be fun to watch as a project player. Hell, he may not even be – he may be – and once again, he could be someone in that starting rotation for Dennis Gates. But that's the way – that's if he's not at first, he could be in the future depending on how his play either stays the same or grows when he comes over to Columbia.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting as to how they will utilize Connor Vanover to start the season into conference play, and if he can make that adjustment once again to playing in SEC basketball. We will take our final break of the show. When we come back, a little bit of headlines, a little bit of NFL talk right here on The Shift on ESPN Kansas City. We are back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. So it is rumored that the cover athlete of Madden 2024 is going to be Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. Marco, how does that grab you? I know that in the NFL, right, everybody should get a turn. At least every star should get a turn. Yeah. We've already seen Patrick Mahomes on the cover. We've seen Tom Brady on the cover. Then we've had some obscure cover boys like Peyton Hillis back in Madden 12. So there have been some oddities, and I'm not going to put Josh Allen in the same category as Peyton Hillis. But do you feel like this was the right pick for Madden? I guess we shouldn't make too big of a deal about it, but Josh Allen is a guy that to date does not have an MVP, does not have a Super Bowl. Neither does Joe Burrow.
Not even an appearance.
Not even an appearance. But Joe Burrow doesn't either. Ja'Marr Chase doesn't. They do have Super Bowl appearances, but no ring. I felt like if they wanted to go more of a skill player, Ja'Marr Chase made the most sense. Mm. If you wanted to go quarterback, I feel like based off the last couple of years, Joe Burrow would have been my pick. But Josh Allen is the guy that allegedly Madden is going to go with. So do you agree with this one? Do you think he's deserving? Should he be fearful of the Madden curse? Or where do you stand right now on the fact that Josh Allen may be the new cover boy for Madden 24?
Tell you what, you asked how it grabs me initially. It doesn't grab me very well. Like, it's not exciting. It seems like a lazy pick, mm-hmm. to seem the least. I mean, I'm gonna have to keep up and follow as far as, I'm sure there's gonna be some interviews coming out of this one from Madden or spokespeople of Madden. It's nothing. I mean, I look back on it. Let's go through some previous one. Obviously, you had Madden. You brought Madden back onto Madden 23.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Mahomes and Brady, the two quarterbacks just played in Super Bowl against each other not so long ago. Lamar Jackson, one of the most exciting MVPs of the last 5 years. And then Madden 20, which I still play to this day with Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen, I just doesn't feel deserving. And that might be a title of his memoir one day. the most deserving, non-deserving quarterback,
yeah.
during his NFL tenure. You mentioned Joe Burrow. That would have been good. I really thought Jalen Hurts was the
That would have been a sweet cover.
I just thought that was like the no-brainer. It was right there in front of you. Led one of the most exciting offenses in the NFL this past season. All the storylines about him, you could have tied into some game modes. You could have tied into the promoting of the promoting of the video game. Although Josh Allen does have he has faced his criticism in the past as a college quarterback going into the NFL, transitioning to the NFL. Jalen Hurts has that same background, but even so similar stories there, but. I mean, the guy just went to the Super Bowl, lost in one of the best Super Bowls that the NFL has ever put on display, aside the results. But I just think that, hell, even, you know, Aaron Rodgers isn't on a cover. That might have been an interesting pick, just thinking off the top of my head, because I would have liked Sauce Gardner a lot. He was an exciting rookie from this past season. Jamar Chase, I mean, if you're going with skills players, they're just, like you mentioned with him, I don't think Derrick Henry has ever been on the cover of Madden, and I feel like he's over-deserved on that one. Scrolling through back really quick. Yeah, no, they haven't had a running back on it since the 25-year anniversary with Barry Sanders. Mm-hmm. Before that, the Peyton Hillis that you mentioned. I mean... Gosh, I haven't had a defensive player on there in a long time. Where's Aaron Donald at for Madden? Josh Allen just seems lazy and non-exciting and, I don't know, very on-brand to, I guess, the gameplay that Madden has had. It's not as exciting or sexy as it used to be. So it's nothing against Josh Allen, but I'm not for it. But hey, they could surprise me with some commercials, I guess.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it is just a video game and they have every right to pick who. And it's not like Josh Allen's a bad pick.
It's our childhood, Jack.
Yeah, it is our childhood. But I even go back to the last couple of years. There have been guys on that, like I said, with Josh Allen, great player, wouldn't say the most deserving. Right? Like Madden 17 was Gronk. Gronk's a very good player at that point in time. Could make a very strong case, the best tight end of the game. Didn't think he was the most deserving. Right, you go to 2019, it was Antonio Brown. I think statistically was a good pick. Killian definitely gives approval back there behind Marco. Mahomes was 2020. Lamar Jackson was 2021. It was Brady and Mahomes in 22. And they went back to John Madden to honor him, the late John Madden, in Madden 23. But I think it had to have been either Jalen Hurts or Joe Burrow. Because Joe Burrow, to me, and I don't think this is a hot take at all, he surpassed Josh Allen. And that's not like some off-the-wall statement. I feel like it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, if you rank the quarterbacks right now in the AFC, Allen's third. I think goes Mahomes, Burrow, and Allen. So that kind of cements the point that, no, Allen's not a terrible pick, just not sure he's the most deserving. And in fact, I think it would have been Jalen Hurts if he didn't get hurt to close out the regular season. That might be the only case because numbers-wise, you know, Jalen Hurts only had 22 passing touchdowns, 13 less than Josh Allen. Passing touchdowns aren't everything, and I think for a lot of Josh Allen's passing touchdowns, it kind of felt like they came inside the 5-yard line, the 10-yard line in the red zone. Mahomes had a lot of those too, right? Mahomes has those 5 passing touchdown games where 4 of them are inside of 10 yards. Not everybody can air it out 30, 35 yards down the field. You take what the defense gives you. But Josh Allen is the epitome, it feels like, of the guy that everybody gives credit to of being this superstar stud without having a legitimate accolade to his name for what we put him up on a pedestal for. Yep. Right? Tony Romo called Josh Allen Mr. January despite being 500 in the playoffs. That's not Mr. January. You can't be Mr. January unless you win a big time meaningful game in the playoffs, right? That's really what you have to have. If you get any sort of recognition as an MVP player, like Patrick Mahomes, don't necessarily agree with the nickname. I don't think it flows that well. I maybe get some criticism for this, but like MVP Pat. They call him MVP Pat. which you can, because he's won an MVP. He's won two MVPs. He's won two Super Bowl MVPs. MV Pat fits. If you wanted to call Patrick Mahomes Mr. January, you can, because he's won a lot of playoff games. He's won three AFC championship games. He's won two Super Bowls. You can call him Mr. February if you want, if it wasn't for Tom Brady. But to me, with Josh Allen, I'm not sure, other than great quarterback, you can really label him as. He's not won the MVP. His biggest playoff win was drubbing the Patriots and Mac Jones. Right? Am I blanking on one here? They hammered New England in a year that New England shouldn't have made the postseason.
Yeah.
They would have beaten. That was the AFC divisional year. Then this past year, they barely skidded by Skylar Thompson and the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right?
My God.
So there's two.
Wow, yeah.
Where am I missing the other? Where am I missing three? Where am I missing four? They lost in the year that the Texans came in to Arrowhead in the divisional round. They lost to Houston. Right? They lost to Houston in overtime in 2019. Or the 2020.
Allen has
four postseason wins. Remind me of the other two, because I don't want to make this statement.
Indianapolis and Baltimore before coming to Kansas City.
So I'm backpedaling here. Lamar in that win in Buffalo was the biggest win of Josh Allen's playoff career. That was the game that the defense just dominated Lamar. Had to pick six in that game. But Lamar's gotten heat for not winning the big game. So that's where I kind of get at here. Even Lamar has more credit, more accolades as an NFL quarterback by winning the MVP. Barely any postseason success. Lamar's biggest win, and only win if I'm not mistaken, is Ryan Tannehill and the Titans. Allen's biggest accolade is beating Lamar in the playoffs. The guy who never has success in the playoffs. So, make him be the Madden guy. I mean, it sounds like I care a lot about it. I really don't. He is a damn good quarterback, but he is so different than the other ones, the AFC quarterbacks. See, like, I can't give Justin Herbert that heat yet because he's not been around long enough. He hasn't as many head-to-head playoff games against each other. Like, Burrow and Mahomes is a bigger rivalry at this point. Burrow doesn't have an MVP, but he's beaten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. That, to me, is an accolade. Allen, I'm still waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. He wins an MVP in the Madden year, absolutely. He can be on another one if he wants to. But it's so weird with Josh Allen. As good as he is, there's not a significant accolade right now to me. He's 4-4 in his career in the playoffs. He has not won an MVP, and he has not won the big-time playoff game. He hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl. And those are all going to weigh on him until he does it. But Josh Allen, your Madden 24 cover boy, at least allegedly for right now. There is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City. Jack, and don't you come back.